I promised that I would check on the draw, so I will have that ready for us by the time we come back. And do they, let me see, do they have a, I would think that they've got opening early, an early meet. Actually, it doesn't look like the state, doesn't look like the state schedule kicks off immediately, does it? No, I don't think so. Doesn't look like it. So I'll pull that up for our visit with Eric. But more importantly, is even more important than the meet, is some decisions that they've made. More or less reinforcing their the reputation that Eric has carved out for Indiana being progressive and responsive to horse player wants and needs. So we'll do that with him next. Other than that, more recapping to be done as well. And we should start to look forward to Thursday in New York. You got a nice carryover from Sunday, or from Saturday, from the big prices that produced. Right? Is 60, I want to say 60-something thousand, if I'm not mistaken. 63,000? 66,000 is right. For Thursday's sequence. So maybe we'll get Nick in for him, and he and I will walk through it. Other than that, I can also tell you, if you want let the music play out, I can tell you that, because I forgot to do it yesterday, there's so much going on. Tina and I, Sunday, Easter evening at Galatoire's, which was fabulous, and we'll be at Brightson's tonight. I get to bring Tina to Brightson's. No knock, and I'll let Tina make her own decision, but no knock on Galatoire's, which was excellent. I will tell you, wasn't as good as Brightson's, what we had when I was here in March. But not even. I mean, it was good. It was lovely. It might be that Frank Brightson has basically ruined me for any other food in this town, which is saying something, right? I have never been inundated with so many requests, or not requests, but suggestions. Bacik has been firing them at me, both he and his brother, Michael and Ben. We mentioned DJ Fisk, got some from him, some good pushes. Sammy Toops, Sammy's got one for me. They're coming in hot and heavy. Eric Hallstrom, next from Horseshoe, Indiana.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania breadsticks, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 17th. Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We're coming to you from the fairgrounds, and another few days we'll be here with Stina vacations, her school break, and she's been well behaved. I've been reading a lot of stories about the spring breakers going wild, and various communities trying to temper the spring break craziness. I can promise you, Tina's been good so far, but it's early. It's only the second day, so I'll keep you advised. And we are in New Orleans. She was good on Easter, actually. We were walking the quarter, and I kept her in check. There's no keeping Horseshoe Indianapolis in check, and Eric Hallstrom. There's no keeping him from making horse players happy. Good morning.
Morning. If one thing we get out of this, though, is next year you should spend spring break in Shelbyville. I mean, what are you thinking down in New Orleans? And you could be in Shelbyville.
Well, listen, I'm the first to sing the praises of the moonlight on the Wabash, but I don't know if I can convince her. I will say that when we got there last year for Derby, for Indiana Derby, I mean, she loved Indianapolis, and you know, we stayed at that Crown Plaza, which has made the most of the train station where we stayed in one of those train cars. It was very cool.
Yep, and I made some reference or some facetious joke there, but because New Orleans is fantastic, you and I share a love of that city. But Indianapolis is great, and there's a lot more things to do than people know. But you know, Shelbyville's growing too. That's going to be my next goal, is to get you a spring break trip to just southeast of Indianapolis.
Well, I do come. You know, I have come up during my 2 weeks my Derby fortnight. I have come up first time actually was that I did that a couple of years back, and I actually do want to come up in a couple of weeks, because I, after doing a show, I want to run up to Tyline, which makes the equipment that we use, and I need a tutorial from them on the box, on this new box that I've got, the Wi-Fi Tyline codec. And they said, just come up, and, you know, I told them I'd be close by. So I might we might pop in even ahead of this year of Derby Day.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. We're all ready for you. The place is just looks great, too. We had some good growing weather here. Our turf course is just as green as you'll ever imagine it to be. We're looking good here.
Well, give everybody let's see. How should we parse this out, Eric? Do we want to, you know, he did promise breaking news. Do we want to break the news and then talk about the meet?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, which news are we talking about? Steve, no, I'm kidding. And I say that because, you know, you and I have had several conversations about this topic in the past, and, you know, maybe it's maybe just getting older and more stubborn that we have kind of waited and bided our time on this, but we are going to, by popular demand and request, since literally the single most requested thing I think we've got from people that we spend our time trying to learn from, I'm talking about customers and industry people, we are going to eliminate our jackpot wager this year, get away from the straight fire pick six, going to add a 11.99% pick five, an early pick five this year. So we'll have a early and late. We'll see. Felt like if we were going to lose a bet, we wanted to add something, and we've had a lot of success with that pick five. And the takeout is, you know, industry leading for most of the year. So I think it should be somewhat attractive for those who weren't so fond of the jackpot wager that we've had for a few years.
Well, this is encouraging, and this a lot of the, I think part of this reaction, and now I'm gonna connect some dots, I think, because you know, Pat Cummings and Andy Beyer with us last week, and then Maury as well, Maury Wolf. We were talking, you know, ostensibly about CAW, but Andy Beyer's really a screed and a call for the elimination of jackpot bets. And Pat had said to me that he had heard from a racetrack executive, and now I'm gonna suggest maybe that it was you, and that the decision to abandon this, really is you being sensitive to what, you know, what is a usury wager that abuses players.
I guess maybe it took me a little bit to come there, and I don't think, you know, I'll say up front, I don't think I'm going to be the face of the crusade against the jackpot wager, but if you spend enough time listening to people that you respect and that have solid opinions and data, you know, data is important. And, you know, over time, I guess I agree that, you know, holding money like that is probably not the way to go. And I'm going to keep the high road here and just talk about, you know, going forward. But if nothing else, I can say this, I feel like our team keeps very connected year round. And, you know, as a group here, and I'm speaking myself and John and Rachel and Brian, and then even Joe Morris and Gabe Pruitt, who, you know, work for Caesars in the corporate way, we're all there. You know, it's time to end that in Indiana, and let's see what we can do with another pick five, which is a very attractive bet here with the takeout that we offer.
Well, and, you know, given the variety of racing and the field size that you get to work with, you know, the fact that you've got, you know, a turf course, you've got the state bred program. I mean, you've got a condition book that's attractive. You got horses that run, you know, very regularly. You're pulling from a number of regional resources. There's so much going for Horseshoe Indy. This is one more message to horse players to you know, take a look, and you know, we've been calling for people to look at Hawthorne and what they've done, you know, driving down the takeout on their whips, on their win play show. I mean, the best way for players to show appreciation for you know, for racetracks acknowledging their needs is to bet and is to, you know, apply their bankroll in their direction.
I couldn't agree more, and you know, I hope that plays out that way. I'm really comfortable with our product at this point too. I mean, it's gotten so much better over, you know, the few years that I've been able to watch it closely, and you know, our handle is showing that as well. You know, up 60% over 2019 numbers, and continuing to go up. And you know, in the end, I guess I want to work in this industry for, you know, as long as I'm working, and the long-term health, you know, legitimately needs to be considered by all, and it put me in a number that wants us, what we're doing here, to last forever. And I've got a lot of good, smart people, including you, who have given me the reasons why this is not a healthy idea. And, you know, we're getting away from it. And then we'll move forward. And really looking forward to our meet, though, because we're kind of loaded in the barn area this year, and things look really great.
Outstanding. Well, I obviously applaud this decision, and, you know, looking forward to a, you know, to another terrific season. Let's actually, and I'm going to put this news out there right now. There we go. I guess I should probably tag Rachel. By the way, got to mention, I'm sure you've gotten all kinds of nice reports. She was a huge hit in Vegas, and was tremendous doing the work, you know, doing the coverage work she did.
Yep, I was very proud of her. She's doing a great job, and I told her, I'll say this to you, and I told to her, she's maturing quite well, and you know, doing some of the things that I tried to work out of her as her supervisor seemed to be working, playing out the right way, and but she did a great job, and she's had just about the exact reaction you did, Steve, except she picked up her stuff and walked out when I said it. And
I'm trying to think of who might be an equivalent. Miley Cyrus, I think, might be. She's kind of maturing like Miley Cyrus has. I agree. Well framed.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is funny. Boy, it's too bad you couldn't have taped that, because that would have been a hit on the internet. Oh my God.
More to come there.
Wow. Let's get the schedule, and I'm just pulling up the condition book. Give us the groundwork, right? April 18th, so a week from today. And what do we draw? What's our first draw date?
Yep, so entries, actually, first day of entry is tomorrow for next Tuesday. We draw a 6-day out as a general rule, which I have learned to really like. As a horse player myself, I nothing better than seeing PPs 5-6 days ahead. And, you know, if you got a day in mind that you're thinking of playing, you know, our past performances will be out there, you know, well in advance. So general rule of thumb is, you know, the Monday to Thursday has been really good to us. However, we're going to try some other stuff this year in the summertime, and we're making some on-track improvements that we want to try to see what we can do with. We've got about a $700,000 project on the apron that will be a well-constructed year-round, I call it an awning system that will span the length of the building. And it's going to be really nice under there, year two especially. We want to bring people out and see if we can make a racetrack experience enjoyable, you know, not just the Monday to Thursday stuff. So in the summer times, there'll be no Mondays, and we're going to move those days to Saturdays. There'll be some quarter horse only days mixed in there. But as a whole, over from April through November, you know, we're generally a Monday to Thursday, 2:30 Eastern type of system here.
Well, there's a couple of things about this that I obviously feel promising, and you know, that includes what ended up being a really bonanza idea with, you mentioned the quarter horse Saturdays that start early in the morning, and you know, essentially you looked at the festival schedule in Europe, and when you knew that you know, American audiences were already on their ADW, you came up with this idea, and it took hold immediately.
It really has worked. And, you know, we're going to mix in some thoroughbred days early in the morning. Keep the quarter horse races at 10:45 this year, just a slight bit later, but still way ahead of anything that else is out there at the time. But want to try some thoroughbreds too. The first one will be on Kentucky Derby Day. We'll run in between the Churchill card the whole day, and you know, lead into the Kentucky Derby on track at night and early evening. So do that again on Belmont Day, and just try to see if we can make something there. Saturdays are going to be tough. You know, there's no doubt that our status in the industry falls quite a bit from Monday to Tuesday, Wednesday to Saturday. However, I'm still proud of what we're putting out here. And, you know, if we be smart, keep our post times away from those you'd want to stay away from, and do what we got to do, we'll be okay. And I think, you know, we can do things on Saturday that we were doing on Monday. You know, quite frankly, Monday's got a little soft in the summertime. So, we'll give us a shot, and it's never a bad thing when you're trying to get people to come to your racetrack either and show them something fun and a very comfortable experience.
Well, and also a few sort of twilight, right? You got a little twilight action?
Got a few mixed in there as well. So Saturday is going to be kind of, we're going to have to keep people informed and make sure they know what we're doing. But we've got, you know, one of the things we did notice last year, we ran one thoroughbred night and we had just a heck of a day. Not as much on our live product, however, you know, we very much need our casino people involved long term here if we're just going to keep growing. And we got a bunch of them to come over, and a lot of them learned a little bit, and maybe this year they do a little bit more. But that casino drives a lot of our purse money, and I will do everything I can to try to get more of those people on this side of the property, and we'll see what we can do. Give us a few Saturday nights, and we'll see if we've got that ability.
No doubt, and of course, it gets hot. It gets hot there in the summer, so some evening right, some evening races would it's a natural.
That's something we have to consider as well. And you're completely right. We've had several cancellations. Last summer was abnormally hot. Let's hope it's more moderate this one. But, you know, we lost a few days and had a couple where we had to move early or late. So I've heard stories about how hot it is at Ellis Park and Delaware and some of these humid places in the summer. This out in the cornfields here, it's no different. It's a hot place to race.
No doubt. Of course, Ellis is, I mean, that's like, Ellis is like racing on the sun. And having lived in Cincinnati and worked, I've explained this before. I still to this day get my shirts starched heavily. And it all stems from working in Cincinnati, where if you didn't get heavy starch, you would be like it would be like MacArthur Park. Someone left the cake out in the rain, and you'd be like a wilted wilted flour. The shirt would be like dripping wet. I would park the car. It's 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. You'd park the car, walk 3 blocks to the Dixie Terminal in Cincinnati, and you'd be dripping wet already. It was miserable. So I started, started getting your shirts, because you're walking around in the office all day. You want, it's Procter & Gamble. You got to look, you got to look sharp. So
you described that well. I understand what you're saying, and I've seen some stuff in this region, the little triangle between Shelbyville and Cincinnati, and maybe up down Ellis Park. It's steamy that time of year, and there's no doubt. So that's one of the reasons why we're putting this $700,000 structure on our apron, is to offer some shade, some misters, some things that for to make it a little bit more comfortable. Because, quite frankly, as I've sat here the last couple of years on some of these Saturdays, and some of them are, most of them have been quarter horse days, but we got a 40 by 40 tent out there, which serves a purpose. But on those days, there's 600 people elbow to elbow under it. And I, just shake my head thinking that's not service, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. So we're going to give it a shot on Saturdays and see, see if we can do some good things.
Undoubtedly. And a couple of other notes, just looking here at the schedule, and Memorial Day, you're going to run Memorial Day with a noon start, also Independence Day, and of course that's a huge week. That's Derby week.
It is, and I'll tell you, this Derby week is one of the efforts we're making, is to make it more than just Derby Day. Saturday, July 8th will be, our Indiana Derby Day, but we've got big ideas here. We added racing on Friday of that week, which is not normal. However, we're making a big push at trying to get as many NHC qualifiers as we can at our facility this year. We've got, a dozen or more opportunities that we think we'll have. But on the Friday before the Derby, we'll have a couple seats that we'll give away. And then on Saturday, it'll be 4 or 5. I'm not sure what Tammy settled on there, but what a great place to come and try to qualify for the NHC when it's a no entry fee, $500, $600 live bankroll. You get everything back that you put in. You get to see that weekend's best racing. We're going to have just a heck of a weekend card there, and stay longer if you want, because we've got even better things. There's good things during the week with the holiday falling on the 4th. Steve, gives us some opportunity. Now, I will say we had a change in our calendar that we just had approved. We're not going to run on July 4th because we're going to have the first drone show in Indiana of history. And we're going to do that on July 3rd. We're going to run and have this drone show at night. And I don't know if you remember the Super Bowl 2, 3, 4 years ago. This company put on this drone show at the halftime extravaganza, and it was amazing. There's 2,000 drones that fly around and change colors and turn from the American flag into a horse, into you name it, whatever you want them to do. But we're going to do that on July 3rd on the night right before the holiday. And, we'll have this place packed, and hopefully like another case where you're trying to get people to come a little bit early and see some racing ahead of that as well. So no racing on the 4th, racing on the 3rd with a drone show by the same company who did the Super Bowl event. So we didn't spare any expense.
Wow. I don't remember. It's funny. I'm sure it's online. Tina and I went to Thunder last year as we were coming. Was it last year that when we were coming, came through Louisville on the way. I don't know. I guess I put her on a plane. I don't remember what we did, but we were coming from Sanibel, and we got to Derby, we got to Louisville early enough to see Thunder. And before the fireworks started, there was something in the sky that was putting on a little show. And I found out later that that's what it was, that it was a drone show. And I
okay.
Yeah, and it was like, wow, what is this? And it was really cool. So, yeah, that'll be, wow. Did this come about because of the drone work you've done with the video camera, with the...
It did not. I'm wondering, I've had a request from our drone operator to see if he could go rogue and just fly ours around with it. And I said, I don't think so. But this came out of one of our marketing folks. And you can go on YouTube and just search Super Bowl drone show, and it's spectacular. And ours will not... I think they had 2,000 drones in that. I think ours is 1,000, but you get the point. It'll be for front and center in front of our people here. And if something, we don't really want to do fireworks, and our horsemen don't want the fireworks either. Just for some of the different noise levels and booms and all that. But this is not a noise factor at all. And it was very easy to get the racing commission and horsemen to sign off on a change when they found out what we're trying to do. And
cool.
Believe me, this thing ain't cheap, and it'll be quite the show. So
really cool.
Maybe, yeah, we think so too.
Is there will players around the country, can we watch it on the feed?
It's going to be a couple hours after our last race, so we'll run till about 8 o'clock. Going to have a band out here till 9:30 or something. This time of year, and especially this far over west in the eastern time zone,
right?
The sun's not going down here until 10:15 at night,
no.
And so we'll there'll be too big of a break to actually to televise it live. But I'm sure in social media we'll have plenty of stuff, as soon as it's live or done. So. Yeah.
Well, again, to reference living in Cincinnati, you talk about that late sunset. We could get out of the office 5:30, 6 o'clock, go play golf. I'd literally play 18 if it wasn't crowded. You could play 18 holes, go home, and have a barbecue, and the sun would just be setting like 9:50 at night. It crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the real benefits of living there was the late, late sunset.
Yeah, no, I do love that about where we're at, and especially with July 3rd, it's almost as close as you're going to get to the, when the sun's highest in the sky. So we'll have to wait till 10, 10:15, whatever that is, but we'll have entertainment and things to go along with
nice.
It. So we're going to have just a heck of a week, and then culminate it with, just racing that I'm really feeling great about.
Well, always, it's been several years that we've been delighted to feature the action at now Horseshoe Indianapolis. And, of course, Caesars has been just such a great, having just come really from Vegas, 5 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, they're all in on horse racing. They're a fabulous partner for the game and the harness side and the flat. They're a valuable ally to the sport.
I'm really proud of the way the company has evolved in that way. And I could lie to you and tell you things that you just want to hear, but I'm telling you the truth when I say that. The people at the very top, while they don't understand our business as much as we do, and they, don't enjoy it like we do, they care about it, and they want that they're anything that they put out there to be first class. And I got $700,000 to put up an awning. that is not happening much around it.
Yep.
That type of capital improvements. We just built barns and dorms for $7 million, and this company has made an investment, and their whole message is go run your business and just be as first class as you can. And there we go. So it's hard not to be happy, working for a company like that.
No, fold in all the support you get from loyal horsemen that come back. I've said it repeatedly. I mean, as difficult it is to acknowledge the loss of Arlington Park for summer racing in Mid-America, Indiana has taken up the mantle, and you're the premier signal in the Midwest during this portion of the calendar.
Yeah, feel good about that. The other thing that's happening, we go away for 4 months or four plus, whatever it is, but we're open year round now, and we got to the point where this is our third year of being a training center over the winter. For those that have participated in our meet, you have to participate at some level. But on February 1st, we had 600 plus horses here.
Wow.
And
wow,
that's a training center at that point. It's not just like what was, the first year when we did it, we had 150, and it was Chris Polson and I switching off who was the clocker. I'd text him the night before and say, can you be there at 8? And if he said no, then I had to make sure I was just to the clock. And now we've got a year-round full-time staff that is here, because it's turned out to be so beneficial for everybody, for the locals, your Klops and Tiana and Mike Lauer and, yep, Michelle Elliott and all these people that have been here. You better bring a horse ready to run against them in April, because these horses are fit, and there's nobody coming in stealing one early in the meet because they think the horses aren't ready. They've been waiting since November for April 18th.
Now, there's a lot. There's so many things, and over the course of the season, we'll get a chance, I'm sure, to talk about the ITOBA as well, the Indiana Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. You should put in a word as well for the state government, the Indiana, the Thoroughbred Breed Development Program, $20 million, some outlandish,
yes,
amount of money that has been devoted. I mean, that is all different things. That's promotion. That's goes into bonuses and breeding bonuses, and there's so much to like about what has gone on in Indiana. So, looking forward to the season.
Yeah, us too. And the product's getting better. Heck, we just had an Indiana bred win, Keeneland in that stake last weekend with Fortin Hill, and there's Paul Lobo had that horse here last year, and he was 2-5, and he was all out to win. It was the top end is getting better, and there's reason to believe that it's not going to stop, just based on some of the commitment that the horsemen are making here, and people coming in from out of state and getting more involved.
Outstanding. Eric, well done. The elimination of the jackpot style bet at Indianapolis this year, replaced by a early pick five with 11.99% takeout on an early pick five. So an early five and a late five, and no more usury jackpot bet. Well done, and we'll start rolling and wading into the action. John Dooley got himself a little freshening. I'm in New Orleans and he's in Indy, so I'm 20, not even 30 feet from his station here at Fairgrounds. Eric, we will talk during the summer, obviously, and we'll be featuring everybody, Brian and John and Rachel, and we'll be handicapping and playing Indianapolis.
That sounds great. No, I appreciate all your help. Hey, but if you are coming up, just let me know. Great to see you.
Without fail.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Hallstrom, everybody. Eric A. Hallstrom, if you're not following him on Twitter, you should. It's not Erica Hallstrom, but Eric A. Hallstrom. And, of course, Rachel, Racing Rachel, on as well. Rachel Racing Racing Rachel M, and Brian Aragone, Mr. B analyst, and John Dooley, right? Dooley too. Dooley, all three of them will be on for opinions during the course of the meet. And I got to check with Tina. I'm just looking at that July looking at the July 8th, and I gotta see about our trip. We're going to Paris. Tina, I get to travel the way I do with a free hand in exchange for Tina controlling our vacation plans. So, last year it was a 50-50, actually. It was the Mexico and then the Route 66, which ended at Indianapolis. And this time, though, one of Spencer's roommates was from Paris, and we got friendly with her parents, and they've invited us. So we got a place to stay for 2 weeks. But I think it may come very close to that. So I may have to pick a different time during the season to go to Indy this year. All right. Well, we will. I will find out later today. I'll ask her because I don't know when. There's always that 10-day period, the end of June, beginning of July, that we take off before Saratoga starts, and Colonial and Haskell. So I've got to find out. All right, let's get Travis in here. Travis Stone is going to join us, and there's some fun things to talk about with Travis. But the best part of that visit, obviously, in addition to promoting the meet, was the elimination of the jackpot pick six. Well done by Indy. And
good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific. And I don't know if you were tuning in for Marty's piece of news. It's been a breaking news morning around here. But Marty said the nicest things about you.
You know, I've got nothing to break, so sorry to bring this down a few notches, but I'm a big Marty McGee fan. I think he's one of the more talented writers in racing. I've told him as much, too. He's got a lot of great stories over the years, and sad to see him doing what he's doing, but excited for him at the same time.
Exactly. What can you do? I mean, it's... this was hinted. I had a feeling this was coming, but whatever tipped the scales, I get it. You responded to something I put out this morning, and it prompted this visit, and it'll be fun because I just happened to cross my a note in my pages section of my computer, and I pulled it up. And I forget what it said as the heading, and I realized, oh, this is the star. It said Stars 2. And so I pulled it up, and there it was. It was the Stars of Tomorrow winners that you called from the second card after Thanksgiving at Churchill last fall. And, a lot of recognizable names that have gone on to good things. But they haven't necessarily gone on to good things while running very fast. And I just thought people would be intrigued by, the benchmark that they set in November, Travis. And you said you were doing of some of your own digging. And you basically are confirming that this is a bunch that's either just slow or that is developing at a glacial pace.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So back when I worked at Louisiana Downs in the late 2000s, we started getting data each year. And I just started making a little ad hoc database. I'm not a DBA and a database administrator. I'm a race caller. So, it's kind of, I have to hack my way through it. But I was curious this week when a bunch of us from Churchill sort of talked Derby quite a bit leading up to the race for, what does this crop look like? And I pulled up all the average winning buyers of prep race winners, if you will, sort of zeroed in on dirt and routes. I didn't want races like the Bayshore or the Hutchison type races to sort of cloud the data. Nothing on turf either. This is just, particularly on the Philly side, this is a bit of a slow group. The Colts are a little bit more even relative to prior years, but nonetheless are slightly slightly lower than what we've seen in recent times, and certainly going back to when this data set started back in 2007. And, you know, who knows what it is, right? I mean, there's a lot of noise in breeding. There's a lot of noise in horse racing. Things come and go. There's always trends. It does seem that when you plot these values over the, you know, the past 15 or so years, that around American Pharoah's year into 2016, the line does seem to dip down a bit more and start to level out more recently. So I don't know if that was just a transition in, you know, dare I say it, regulation of horse racing, if you will, a trend in the breeding or what have you. But yeah, this is just a bit of a slower group as of right now. The one thing I'll say, though, is in terms of hitting the century mark on the buyer scale, that really hasn't changed a ton over the last handful of years. But again, back in the 2009s, 10s, 11s, there were more of them. So I don't know what it means, right? I mean, it could mean a bunch of different things, but anytime you're talking data and horse racing, I'm intrigued because it's always an interesting conversation.
Well, and one of the things that I'll do, and I mentioned it in the post that I put up, the conversation that I'll have tomorrow with Sid Fernando from a breeding standpoint, and I mean, just looking at this group, and most of these numbers were basically in the 70s and 80s, and this is November, and the distances are noted, you know, anywhere from 6.5 up to 8.5, and you know, determinedly from Cassie, broke the maiden going 7 with an 83. He's a Cairo Prince. Towhead, the nice filly of Makers, a 64 going long. Now, you know, November, that's a moderately early time to send two-year-olds a mile and a 16. You know, even though they've run that distance at you know, it depends on when these two-year-olds got their careers started. You know, there's the ones that are starting right now at Keeneland. Then there's going to be the next layer that'll, you know, Belmont and Churchill, et cetera, that'll keep coming out. So, you know, there's like layers of two-year-old career starters. Victory Formation for Cox, an 85 sprinting going 6, but that was actually a first-level allowance. Vava for Cherie, a 76. This is a gun runner. Point Proven, Pletcher was a gun runner, breaking the maiden going a mile and an eighth. So, and typically, if you're going a mile and an eighth at that time of year, you know, you're kind of a plotty two-year-old, that typically. Worthington with a non-winners of two allowance going a mile on a grass, the only grass race of the day. Red Carpet Ready, who, of course, went on to success for Rusty at Gulfstream this winter, a 78, winning the Fern Creek, going 6.5. She's an Oscar performance. Point Proven's a gun runner. A Classic Empire is Worthington. Taprit is the sire of Victory Formation. Then you had Confidence Game, an 83, and really hasn't moved forward that much from there. Keith DeSormo, of course, a Candy Ride. Powerful, who's a Nyquist for Asmussen, won the Ed Browns, going 6.5, a 73 buyer. Hoosier Philly, whose exploits are well publicized and documented. She has basically been the same speed from her debut. She wins the Goldenrod with an 81. Instant Coffee, who took a little bit of a step forward for Al Gold and Brad Cox, but an 82 winning the Kentucky Jockey Club, and then Gunpilot. He's a Bolt Doro. The point is, most of those stallions that we just went through, there's no sprint stallions in there. These are all two-turn pedigrees. And I want Sid to, you know, that's why I get so incensed, Travis, when people say, oh, American breeding, speed. What are you talking about? There is no speed. There's no speed stallions. Everybody wants a two-turn horse, and this is the result.
Right, and then I think you could also layer on top of that, to be honest with you, the point system for the Oaks and the Derby, which has discouraged, you know, sort of the precocious two-year-olds from garnering all those greatest stakes points early in the season, and sort of encouraged a more methodical and, you know, tactical approach to the Derby. Obviously, we saw some stuff this year with how the points have shaken out that, you know, maybe some of them went to the extreme. But yeah, so like there's not this incentive to get these horses cranked early. So a more late developing, situation with this crop is probably not totally unexpected. And you're right when you mentioned those sires. I mean I don't see any turf sprinters there, right? I mean these are all more distance oriented with plenty of bottom, and distances should not be an issue for many of them. So that's a great point. I agree.
Let Sid riff on it. And it a lot of this stems from, let's be honest, the Oaks and Derby and Triple Crown and the stallion focus that everybody, that so much in the breeding game has become. Everybody wants a Derby horse, a Saturday horse, and I think there's a lot of that going on here. Let Sid take it from there. You bring up the point system, and I'm sure you saw Brad Cox's point about that he's unconvinced that the addition of a fifth rung in the point scoring, that it got people to run more, that adding that fifth rung. Did you do any elasticity study on the point strata?
Well, so, I mean, as you know, I'm friendly with many of the folks at Churchill. Obviously, I work there. But also, we like to have conversations about this stuff off to the side, maybe with a pint or two during the prep season. And I have long said that I would prefer the points system to reward a little bit more earlier in the campaign so that we don't completely bury our two-year-old racing program in America. That's a big part of what we do, right? The whole Saratoga and Del Mar two-year-old seed leading into the fall with some of the big races throughout the country. And so, not that they took my advice whatsoever. I'm not involved in those discussions. But they obviously boosted the points earlier in the year, so the January races were worth a little bit more, and they added that additional rung. Now, whether or not a horse earned the points this season, I think is unfair to blame the points. And I'm certainly not saying that, Brad was unaware of what was going on. I don't want to say that whatsoever. But as our friend Andy Serling tweeted, if you wanted more points, the answer is pretty simple. Run more. And running more is good for the game. I don't buy this notion that horses need 6 to 8 weeks between races. That's bogus. That's hogwash. Horses can run more often. And they should. And so this point system will now encourage this in years to come. I am a huge fan of the adjustment. And I don't say that because I'm on the payroll. This has created look at all the drama we've already had in the 3 days since the final round of preps, right? There's already this conversation about the 26th horse and what have you. So I think it's good. And now with the year behind us, they'll adjust, right? They're going to live and learn. If you're on the outside looking in, you can't rely on that final prep anymore. You have to get going earlier. And if you don't have the horse to do so, that's racing, right? I mean, there's a lot of horses every year that aren't ready come Derby season. So I was pleased with how this shook out. I'm glad they made those changes. And I'm excited to see how this all shakes out in the next couple of weeks leading up to the Derby, right? I mean, there's some good horses on the outside looking in right now. And it feels like it's just the right sort of mix of, sort of the two-year-old type greatest stakes earning scene and what the modern day point system has brought. I feel like it's a little bit more toward the middle, and that's a good thing.
That would bring us to these topics are basically flowing into each other. You've been commenting right along as the prep season, for those that aren't, if you're not following Travis, you should be. Some thoughts about where we are with the existing 20, did you see that crazy tweet from who?
Which one? There's a lot of them.
One of the betting outlets, was it FanDuel maybe? FanDuel had the craziest. I think it was not the FanDuel racing side, but the sports betting side. Maybe I don't want to assign this to any one betting outlet, but somebody put up a link to their. They said, "Oh, the Derby field is set." So I said, "Let me go look at this," and it was like completely wrong. It's like one of those tweets, where somebody says, "Boy, I think that." and they mentioned some four-year-old. I think he'll could be real tough in the Derby this year. It fits that model. I don't know. I'll find it. I got it here somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting group, right? I mean, we talked a little bit about that maybe on the buyer scale, the speed figure scale, they're lacking a little bit as of right now. That doesn't mean they're not good horses and will develop into faster horses as time goes on. There's just a lot of intrigue. You've got the Japanese interest. You've got the defending champion coming back with some question marks. I think everybody was a little bit maybe underwhelmed the right breakthrough effort that set him up for Louisville, and he was sort of just barely got there and didn't really look like he was traveling all that well the whole time. You got up-and-comers like Angel of Empire, who was really impressive with a wide sustained run. The Practical Move has done nothing wrong. He's had some good trips. He hasn't left the rail in his three wins, but he's run fast numbers, so he's intriguing. I think Tappet Trice is just an awesome horse to watch. I was at Keeneland this past weekend, and they went by us, and he didn't get out of the gate particularly well, and Saez was trying to hustle him. And like the Tampa Bay Derby, was like, oh man, this is going to be another one of those. If he's going to win, he's going to have to grind it out. But then all of a sudden, going down the backstretch, there he is, mid-pack and moving up. So like, he really took a nice step forward in the bluegrass, and verifying we had to run down is no slouch himself. So, you know, there might be things get a little bit weaker as you get deeper down the list in terms of figures and ability, but the horses at the top are, they're all pretty much right there. And I think if you're interested in any of them, you're going to get a decent price. A couple of them might go off a little bit underlaid. Derma Sotogake probably goes off a little bit underlaid because I think everybody's trying to look for a fresh face in this group. It's intriguing. The other thing about this race, and you know, the Derby always has a pace, right? They rarely go 49-2. Rarely, maybe if ever in recent times. So there's always going to be a bit of a sharp pace, the nature of the long run of the first turn, the screaming crowd, the jockeying for position. But right now, there really is no one-way speed where it's like, this horse is definitely going to be on the lead. And I think the riders might have a bit of a reaction to what happened last year, which they obviously flew and set it up for Rich Strike. So there might be a bit of an overreaction to how things shook out last year. Which, you know, when you talk about Forte and Tappet Trice, two horses that like to come from a bit off the pace, that doesn't really suit them if the pace isn't scorching. So, it's the Derby. It's always got a lot going on.
You know, one name that seems to be escaping, unscathed or unmentioned, is Two Phils. And yesterday, who was it that yesterday asked me, my early, you know, because nobody has really grabbed me by the lapels, per se. I was excited about Reincarnate running back out of the Rebel because I was there for the Rebel. And I saw what everybody else saw. And I actually stood there as Johnny described everything that went on. And I really expected him to run that much better but he kind of ran the same race again. But the horse that I latched onto early on, and again, I saw him here in New Orleans, Two Phils and Ravelli are going to be a little bit out of sight, out of mind, and because they won it at Turfway, it's going to be discounted, and I think that's a huge mistake because he's going to come in here battle-tested. Kind of Two Phils, and you're going to get a nice mid-price long shot number on him.
Yeah, I mean, I finished up watching all the replays for these horses, and I watched Two Phils last night, and I wrote on my notes that he just finds a nice rhythm in the middle portions of the race. Wherever Jareth Loveberry needed him to be, he went, and he just was just coasting along well. I'm a little bit skeptical. He's going to love the mono quarter. That'd be my one concern. And maybe the synthetic moved him up last time. He has a breeding that would maybe suggest that. But he is without a doubt one of the horses that, I mean, he's what, 15, 20 to 1? I mean, anything lower than that, I think some goofy stuff starts to happen on the odds board. So I'm with you there. I'll give you two more, too. I think, and maybe this is just being a little bit silly, but I think King's Barnes is okay. developing. You know, everybody's going to discount his Law Derby because he got away with an easy lead and what have you. But there was no speed in there. So whatever, he sort of just broke out on top and went on with it from there. He rated fine in his first two career wins. And he's going to be forwardly placed in a race that I think sort of suits that style. So I thought he was one. Him and two Phils, I expect them to be in sort of similar positions early. And then one more. It's probably going to be a tough ask, but I think Skinner's a good horse.
Oh, yeah.
I like Skinner's. I thought Skinner's progression last time was noted. You know, he's put in these wide runs in a race like the Derby. If he gets in, if he's allowed to make that run maybe a little bit later to sustain that rally or, you know, have a little bit of a sharper punch on it late in the race, I think that would suit him well. Those would sort of be my three, you know, if I'm not wanting to play horses like Practical Move and Forte and Tapa Trice, those would be the three that I'm looking at as well. I totally agree with you on two Phils.
I should mention, I think we saw that Angel of Empire officially, that Flavian Pratt committed in that direction, and so that'll mean that Kings Barnes is
yep.
gonna have somebody new aboard. So be aware of that. Not that it's a problem. You know who's gonna land a mount here that really did not have a horse through the late stages is Jose Ortiz. So he's going to, and he might suit, actually, he suits Kings Barnes, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's a style that I would like Jose on for sure.
Right?
Forwardly placed. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I agree.
You mentioned Skinner. Skinner is sitting at 21 pending what goes on. I mean, if Disarm runs on Saturday in the Lexington, all it's going to take is second. 8 points would put him 17th and would squeeze Jace's Road down to 21. But the expectation is that Blazing Sevens will not participate. So whoever is 21, depending on Saturday, probably gets to run. So if depending on Disarm status, Skinner probably would get to run under the circumstances, and it's hard to believe that nobody else will have a hiccup. I mean, this is always the worst waiting game in the sport.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about this a lot.
Yeah,
this horse is out, that horse is in. Who's next?
Exactly.
What are you hearing? What am I hearing? Yeah,
that's
can't wait. It's the best part of the time of the year.
Well, it's, you know, I know that very frequently people put up their screen captures of texting. I should put up the screen caps of my conversations with Eric Reed for literally 3 weeks leading up to the official entry of Rich Strike getting in, because I basically was keeping Eric up to speed on who, you know, on where he stood numerically about getting in. And then who doesn't, after sweating it all out, you know, not a nickel, not a dime, do I put. And that was even acknowledging that, you know, there was a potential. I was looking for horses to come from off the pace myself, and you know, to use, and still didn't use them. So, but I really should put those up because it's a lot of fun. It's like, all right, you're 23rd, but XYZ is probably coming out, so you're 21, and it's unbelievable.
It's the greatest,
right? Too funny.
Every spring, it's the greatest.
We'll revisit this. I'm glad we're doing this because whenever I get to Derby, whenever I get to Churchill, I get there 2 weeks out. I see you at some point in my first week and say, "Oh, we got to get you on." And then I don't see you again until Oaks morning. So having this pre-conversation is helpful, and I'm gonna get you for later thoughts once the field is more locked in. But I do want to get one more topic, and Andy Serling will have to wait a couple of minutes as you answer this. I don't know how much of last week's discussion with Pat Cummings, Andy Beyer, and Maury Wolf you were able to hear, but I imagine you heard of it. And you're a serious, I don't want to say syndicate head, but you've got a group of players that you attack big multi-race opportunities. What's your take on the CAW, on you know, the movement, price movement, and the value sapping that's gone on? Some reaction from you and how you adjust to it.
Yes, I think, I mean, I've read quite a bit about it, heard quite a bit about it, obviously on some text with Pat, and we talk about it quite a bit. I think there's a few things that racing has to figure out, one of which is we need an updated tote technology.
Yeah.
I remember during the pandemic when obviously racing was the only sporting game in town. Everybody else had shut down, and we've got horse racing. And you know, we all saw that boost in handle during that period of time. And these people are playing the races, and they're looking at odds that are cycling every 30 or 45 seconds. And it's like, I can send you money today, Steve, for a pick five wherever, and you'll get it in seconds. And yet for horse racing with millions of dollars, billions of dollars wagered every year, we have to wait 30 to 45 seconds to get an update on that data. So yeah, it's no surprise that odds move, period, regardless of who's involved in the pool. So I think that's one thing that I'm pretty adamant about. The other is everybody should get the same access to these pools and the data. You know, society is moving more toward data. Everybody loves data. The young generation wants to work with data. They want to build spreadsheets. They want to build models. They want to build systems. So let's let them have at it. You know, we can't be a closed market forever. Closed markets don't really succeed in the long run. So I think that's one thing. And then, you know, when it comes to, you know, the recreational player that plays day in and day out, when you're a horse player and you're a handicapper, you can beat a computer on any given random race. You're not going to be able to beat a computer 100 races in a row if you're playing every race together. It's just not feasible. So we as humans have to adapt and adjust, find the spots where we believe we have an edge, figure out where computers don't have an edge, and adjust accordingly. Markets get more efficient over time. It's a proven economic fact, right? So to say that they're not going to get more efficient is a little bit of ignorance. And instead, we need to sort of make the adjustments on our own and find where our edge can be. Maybe you're a better trip watcher than a computer. Maybe you're a better speed handicapper, a better pace handicapper. Maybe pedigree is your thing, and you know, first-time turf starters or what have you, whatever. That's where humans need to find their edges and their advantages now. And, you know, like a race like the Derby, where we've seen every prep, we've thought about every prep, we've thought about every horse, all the connections, all the scenarios. Like, in the long run, we can't beat the computers 100 times heads up. But a race like the Derby and some of these races, yeah, we can. So, yeah, I mean, those are sort of like the three big themes that I think about with all this stuff. And I'm not a big fan of the jackpot wagers at all, so I was happy to see that in Indiana Grand. I believe that's definitely an area where racing probably could have made some adjustments and not gone down that path. But, you know, such is life, here we are. But, yeah, that's what I would say.
What portion of the wagering menu and landscape right now provides, in your opinion, the, you know, the rank and file player with their best opportunity?
It's a great question. You know, one of the unspoken about problems in all this is that the product racing is offering right now is not all that sexy. Field size is down. The races feel a little bit less competitive than they've been, you know, over the past 5, 10, 15 years. And so I was always a superfecta and trifecta player because I try and find a big field with a lot of pace and try and figure out who's going to rally for third and fourth at big odds and sort of build tickets upside down. Now, if we get involved with pools, inevitably our group is always like, let's do a pick four, pick five, or pick six. And to me, it's about finding the big heavy favorite that is worth taking a shot against, right? I'll give you an example. Like the Bluegrass this past Saturday, I thought that late pick five and the pick six of the off, not the late one, the sort of the middle one with all the stakes, I thought it was an interesting sequence because I thought Caravelle was vulnerable and I thought Tapitrice was vulnerable. Was wrong. It was very wrong. Caravelle, I mean, I don't know how that horse keeps winning. What an amazing athlete. But was close to losing, right? And so if you can beat Caravelle and you can beat Tapitrice, who they both won, but you could argue they barely won. Verifying ran a big race, too. That's where you really create separation. And so to me, it's those multi-race wagers that can really help set people up for success. And, you know, they're a little bit, you have to handicap in advance, which is sometimes tricky. A lot of people don't have time. That's why I like getting together with groups. In fact, our group will sometimes say, all right, you take the first leg, I'll take the second leg. And then let's commit at 2 o'clock and figure things out, right? So yeah, to me that's where it is. But you know, to bring it back to the Derby, I don't bet the Derby because I call the Derby and I don't want to be influenced. I miss it. I would bet the trifecta, the superfecta, and if I had a good week, the high five all day long in a race like the Derby, because I think those are some of the most value-laden pools every year. But yeah, that'd be my thoughts there.
Hey, one final question. Travis Stone visiting with us. The group approach. How do, especially if different people are handling different legs, how does everybody stay friends and not get on each other's throat or get a nerve, you know, because one person thinks something in a certain leg but you're committed to their, you know, the decision, and then the other horse wins, and you know there's a lot of animosity. How do you keep that from infiltrating the methodology?
You know, a big part of it is just trust, and a big part of it is, for lack of a better word, experience. You know, everybody in racing, all of us that play the races, we've been smart one day and we've been dumb the next. And not every day is your day. And so one of the things that we started to do was sort of get rid of the whole idea of you take this race, I'll take that race, and give me your thoughts here, give me your thoughts there. But there's one point person that's in charge of it all. And you sort of live and die by their sword. And you recognize that it might be their day, it might not. It's without a doubt challenging at times, because you know, if Scott Shapiro says I love the three and the fifth race at Keeneland, and you know somebody else said Joe Kay says no, I need the six in there. Well, you've doubled the cost of your ticket. That's where things get dicey, and I think you have to be willing to punt on the sequence overall, and you don't necessarily have to play it. But yeah, you know, it'll test the metal a little bit, but as long as you accept the family. Any day could be your day. Most days are not, but when they are, you just want to be right for the big score. And it's, you know, keep above water as long as you can, and tread the water until that big hit comes. But yeah, you gotta ego check at the door, and you gotta cut your feelings out at the door, because inside it can be pretty intense.
Just one of the brightest minds around the game. Travis, thank you. I will see you in
a couple of weeks. Yeah, we'll see you. Appreciate it as always, Steve. Safe travels.
Travis Stone, folks, and follow Travis at Travis Stone. Let's take our second break. We're about 8 minutes in. Andy Serling's going to join us. I want to hear Andy's take on the weekend, on the three prep races, how to digest them, and go from there, right? Not to mention the rest of the action at the Big A. Turf racing is back, which is really welcome, with the beautiful aqueduct turf courses. And the carryover. I guarantee Andy's already done the work on the $66,000 Thursday card in South Ozone Park. Andy Serling joins us next at the races. We're coming to you from Fairgrounds. Jazz and Heritage Festival.